Today on The Independent, former Notre Dame great Ian Williams joins the show to talk about Notre Dame's defensive line's production this season. Plus, Pete and I recap Dabo Swinney's rant and offer our predictions for Notre Dame's game Saturday at Clemson.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Independent. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host Matt Fortuna in Chicago. I'm Pete Sampson in South Bend of The Athletic, Matt of The Inside Zone. Matt, this weekend is kind of not, I think, what we thought it was going to be in the summer, but that has everything to do with Clemson and only slightly something to do with Notre Dame. So we can talk about that. But also, I mean, and also on a micro level, there's a pretty good chance that we don't see Will Shipley, Clemson star running back, who was a former must-have prospect in Notre Dame's recruiting department. They did okay with Audrey Kestaman and Logan Diggs in place of him. But Notre Dame is going to be without Mitchell Evans, who I think went from, can he be the next guy at tight end, to probably the most indispensable offensive skill position player they have based on his workload and production. So it's a game that still has a ton of intrigue behind it. I think the brands would dictate that, even if they were both 2-6. But this game's got a lot to it, including a head coach on one of the sidelines who got a little bit feisty this week.
Yeah, no kidding. God, what a strange week and lead up to this game this has been and will continue to be, right? I mean, it's not at all the circumstances we predicted it to be in a couple months ago. And then Dabo Swinney just goes on a pretty epic rant on a coach's radio show this week. And, you know, Pete, you and I talked a little bit off air of like the datedness of coaches calling shows. And just when, like, that broke, a guy who used to work on one text me, was like, I've been advocating for years to get rid of these things. I don't know why coaches still do them. I know Notre Dame doesn't do it anymore.
Dabo's what, making, is he, according to Tyler, he's making $11.5 million a year. I don't know.
He's north of 10. Yeah.
Okay. Let's just say he's making $10 million. In what world does someone making $10 million a year subject themselves to calls from random people, like criticizing their job performance? That blows my mind that these things even exist, but I'm glad that they did at least this week, because it was hilarious.
He's number two, according to USA Today's chart, behind Saban. He's at $10,884,775. Buyout is a cool $64 million if Clemson decides we can find our way out of the ACC and do this. It's kind of an antiquated thing, right? And a lot of coaches still do it. Mark Stoops, Lincoln Riley, you know, other guys have made headlines on them so far this year. I will say, like, I saw the first like batch of tweets trickling out as it happened. I'm like, oh, this isn't good. And then you see more of them and you're like, this really isn't good. And then you see the clip of just Dabo speaking and you're like, oh boy, this is bad. Now, I will say, not in his defense, but if you listen to the whole clip, they let this caller go for about 2 minutes straight. And it's like, it'd be like me, Pete, just sitting here with you being like, Pete, you're bald. I hate Sinatra. You suck as a podcaster. And you're only doing this with your friends. Like, it was literally like, and the guy's like, I was a veteran and I didn't see any of your championships, but I watched your press conferences and I noticed a change in you, Dabo. And you're only hiring you. And it was like, and Dabo finally cuts. It was kind of funny. Like, if you listen to the whole thing, it's funnier because Dabo's like, all right, Tyler, that's enough. Like, and he just like claps back at him, because when you hear it on its own, it's like, man, this sounds personal. Dabo keeps calling him by his name and I'm thinking it's like a 12-year-old kid or something. It's not good. Like, yeah, there are some theories going around saying this was a plant to set Dabo off, and I don't know, crazier things have happened in college football.
Things are happening right now in college football.
You look to our friends in Ann Arbor to see, you know, what I'm talking about there. There was a viral clip this summer of Nick Nurse, the Sixers coach now, talking about the championship run in Toronto when he was the Raptors coach, and they lose their first game, and everyone said the Raptors were down and out, and they could never win the big one. And he said, the first thing I did was I sat Kyle Lowry down in my office. I looked him in the eye, and I said, me and you make a lot of money, and so we could take all the shit we're about to take right now. Let's deal with it and win. And they went out and won the championship. And I think that's such a great, like, encapsulation of, like, yeah, that's what the money is for, as Don Draper would say. Like, to take crap. Now, again, I don't think you need to subject yourself to a coach's call-in show, and it wouldn't shock me at all if Clemson did away with this next year. But, like, you don't want to make headlines on these things unless you're announcing, like, an NIL donation or, you know, some positive news, right? And now everyone is retweeting it and listening to it, because the coach of a 4-4 team who had a lot of success not too long ago sounds like he's losing his marbles quite a bit. And he didn't really give anyone, you know, context really doesn't matter in this situation, because people are going to hear what they want to hear, and they hear a coach who's lost it. So we'll see. I mean, I don't how that impacts this week. I don't know. In some ways, like, I look at this as the opposite of the Notre Dame USC game, where like, oh, USC is undefeated. Notre Dame's coming off a terrible loss to Louisville. Well, you know, USC should kill them, right? And you know, the analogy's not completely accurate, but like, Clemson scares me this week. I will say that. Like, there's, if you look at the advanced stats, like, this should be a much better team than 4-4. The offense moves the ball. They just cannot get out of their own way with turnovers and penalties and you name it. And that's still a really good defense. And, you know, if we've learned one thing about Notre Dame, it's you don't know what product you're going to get Saturday to Saturday. And while this is the last one they're probably capable of losing, and they should win it, and the Vegas line indicates that more and more people think Notre Dame should win it, it's by no means an easy game. And I think the circumstances around it, knowing that this is your last real hurdle before a bye week and before probably playing your way into a New Year's Six game, there's some, like, you better not lose this pressure to Notre Dame to this that I think didn't exist under normal circumstances.
Yeah, it's, I think the, you mentioned sort of the parallel of the USC, but with role reversal. I almost feel like it's the Clemson game last year, but role reversal. I mean, sure. Notre Dame was 5-3. They lost to Stanford, Marshall. Like, you're just like, is this team any good? We don't know. They, I think they were coming off a game at Syracuse where they were good then bad, right, and just sort of held on. I could see not that I would expect Clemson to beat Notre Dame, like, what, 35-7? Like, that's not happening. But I could see Clemson playing really, really well out of nowhere on Saturday, because it should be a program with a decent amount of pride to it. I think that there are way more similarities, and I felt this way a long time, like, there are way more similarities between Notre Dame and Clemson than Notre Dame and basically anybody else who's at the top of the college football food chain in terms of the types of players they get, the types of coaching they get, like, the fact that there's a little bit more play for the school vibe, I think, at Clemson and Notre Dame than a lot of other places. So yeah, I could see Clemson playing great on Saturday. I could also see Notre Dame struggle a little bit offensively, like Mitchell Evans, to lose him for the season with a torn ACL. For starters, like, if you are in the small minority of, like, he shouldn't have been in the game, you can just stop with that. Like, it was the third quarter.
His father made that clear.
Yeah, his father made it very clear on social media last night that you can STFU on that. But that it's a huge blow. The passing game, it hurts them. The run game, it hurts them. And I think just in terms of getting your best 11 on the field is very hurtful, because, like, if you look at Mitchell Evans' workload or work volume, it's off the charts. I think he was at, I wrote this today, I should have it memorized, like, about 450 snaps for the season. And among offensive skill position players, the next closest is Tobias Merriweather at about 300. Mitchell Evans even missed a game in there too,
right,
but still is way out in front of everybody else by about roughly 2.5 games of snaps. He was just a guy Notre Dame never wanted to take off the field, and now they have to play the rest of the season without him. He was just a total brute in the run game. And, you know, the catches that he made against Ohio State and Duke, I think he had, I totaled this up, he had more receiving yards against Ohio State and Duke than the rest of the team combined in those two games. So it's not just leading the team in production. It's the fact that Notre Dame has not had anybody else to fill in the gaps. This weekend, you know, the way Chris Tyree is playing, Jaden Thomas is a little healthier, Jaden Greyhouse is a little healthier. Maybe they do, but it's, and this is kind of was another thing that, like, you never would have thought this in the summer. Man, how does Notre Dame replace Mitchell Evans? This feels like a really acute issue, but it is. And that's a real credit to Mitchell Evans and all the work that he put in to get where he was.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was watching Monday Night Football and Brock Wright on the Lions and Michael Mayer on the Raiders. And God bless Mayer. He's playing with as bad as I feel for him, I feel worse for Devontae Adams, because watching Jimmy Garoppolo just get his butt handled to him with no offensive line and not be able to throw the complete passes was tough to watch. But Mitchell Evans was the biggest revelation on offense this year. again, it's tight end you. It's Notre Dame. You expect them to be solid to great at that position every single year. You mentioned the snap count. Looking at the box scores now, I mean, the guy has 29 catches for 422 yards, both the best on Notre Dame. Second in catches, a guy who played one more game than him, is Chris Tyree at 19. And 2 weeks ago, we were wondering about the Tyree receiver experiment as a whole. So that is a very significant loss. I would not underestimate that by any stretch of the imagination. The one thing I not that I didn't feel confident in Notre Dame, you know, because Sam Hartman played in the ACC, we have a lot of like his history to go off, and for better or worse, it's kind of rung true, whether it was Louisville and Pitt to a lesser extent last week. On the positive side, last year, that guy threw for 337 yards and 6 touchdowns against Clemson. They scored, I think, 45 points. You know, their defense couldn't stop anyone, and that's why they lost the game. So he's certainly not going to be intimidated by this stage. Again, it's another good Clemson defense. They've got talent on that team. I mean, the difference between them and what they used to be, I hate to oversimplify it, but the portal, right? I mean, Dabo has been so anti-portal. I heard stories from former staffers who would get into him at the end. Like, you got to stop being so stubborn about this. Like, this is the way Alabama, Georgia recruit 5 stars who don't work out. They replace those 5 stars the next year by going out and getting them from elsewhere.
They go get Jahmyr Gibbs.
Yeah, I was just saying, Jahmyr Gibbs, perfect example. A guy from Georgia Tech. They go and get them. Clemson doesn't do that. They haven't done that. And they're going to have to do that if they're going to, you know, reclaim their throne at the top of the college football food chain. So, again, still a very talented roster. I don't think Dabo forgot how to coach overnight. I do think it's a prideful program, like you said. I don't think maybe this is, you know, directly correlates to not having transfers and hired guns, but I do think it's a program that hasn't looked like it's thrown in the towel and has given up on the season despite its goals being behind. Even 2 years ago, they started off, I think, 3-3. Like, they had 3 losses early and they ended up finishing with 10 wins and win a bowl game. And, you know, that was not a great roster and they dealt with a lot of injuries, but they seem to have fun with it. They're not having fun with it right now, clearly, but I wouldn't. It scares me. That's all. I mean, all the public money's on Notre Dame right now. Like, you know, there's just all these indicators, and we've both covered the sport long enough where we see crazy stuff happen. Like, this one has all the makings of like, oh, okay, maybe Louisville wasn't a fluke. Maybe Clemson isn't dead yet. Maybe this and this. Like, and again, I'm overthinking it, but it does scare me, you know, as far as all those kind of off-field elements.
Yeah. And I think that, and I asked Marcus Freeman immediately about this after the game on Saturday against Pittsburgh. Like, when Notre Dame has gone on the road this year, it hasn't looked good. It looks a long way away from how it's played at home. You know, you just think NC State, the way that game started until the weather delay, NC State was all over Notre Dame. Duke was a huge struggle offensively. You know, that was a game where Notre Dame could look at itself at halftime and be like, wait a minute, why aren't we up 17-0? I think it maybe was 10-7 or 10-3. It was a close game that didn't need to be that way. And then obviously Louisville was just like a all phase meltdown. They've struggled with penalties on the road. They've struggled just sort of with pre-snap execution on the road. So this is a chance to get right on that. But if they do it, it will be a change from how they played on the road the previous 3 games. So it's a chance for Notre Dame to prove something. I do think that, you know, mentioned Mitchell Evans being out, Ben Morrison and Cam Hart will be back at corner. If Clemson had T. Higgins and Justin Ross, like, that would be a different kind of matchup. Bo Collins, I don't think their other top is Antonio Williams.
He's hurt, right?
Yeah, he's been hurt. He's been hurt really on and off all year. Like, it's a very pedestrian group of receivers. And I feel like Notre Dame has shut down a lot better receivers than what they're going to face at Clemson this year. It all sort of trends towards like a kind of a low scoring rock fighty type game. But if there's like one team that's going to break out and put it on the other, I still feel like Notre Dame is the more likely team to do it.
I think so too. And because for all the faults on the road that you mentioned, defense travels. And this is a defense that gets better every single week. 11th in total D, 10th in yards per play, 10th in scoring, 3rd in passing.
I think they're 3rd in turnovers gained.
I believe that's right as well with 18. I mean, Notre Dame, say this every game, Notre Dame protects football. They win this game.
Yeah.
They can't get off to this kind of start they did against even Pittsburgh last week because Clemson will make you pay for those mistakes. So, again, this is a game they should win. It's one of those ones where it's like it's kind of the last real test. There's all these indicators, if you will, about Clemson just being very volatile right now that you just, again, kind of like Notre Dame after Louisville, they put it all together really from the opening snap defensively and like they did against Clemson last year as well. And all of those factors really, they scare me a little bit. I mean, they just do because this has just been a very, this is not the Brian Kelly Notre Dame team where you know what you're going to get week in and week out. This is a younger staff that frankly hasn't always had them prepared for these spots. Now they had them prepared for USC. They had them prepared out of the bye last week for Pittsburgh. They need to continue that streak this week if they want to make a New Year's Six game, which I think we can all agree would be a pretty happy ending for all involved in year two of the Marcus Freeman regime.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is kind of like something's got to give. You're right. Like they haven't played well on the road, but they have played up to better brand name opponents under Freeman. This is a better brand name opponent. Like I even think like the game against Ohio State when they lost, they played the last year in Columbus, like they played really well for almost three full quarters. Didn't play great at USC at the end of the year. I'm not sure how much of that I would put on like Freeman and like the team. You know, they played well in Vegas against BYU, who was, I think, better at the time than they turned out to be. But, you know, and this year, Ohio State and USC were at home. They played very well in both those games. So it's like, you know, is it the home atmosphere that has buoyed Notre Dame more, or is it sort of the staff's ability to like bring out kind of an emotional edge against better brand name opponents that has carried the day? I think we'll find out. I mean, I do think the noon start is a godsend for Notre Dame because if this was a 7:30 p.m. kickoff, even though Clemson was 4-4, I think the fan base would act like they were 7-1 or 8-0.
I go back and forth on that one, and you know, recent history will argue against myself here, but I just think you can't not get up for a night game. Now, I guess they didn't do it for Louisville, but 12 p.m. games. I mean, what? I guess.
I mean, Clemson would get up for a night game in the way that they won't for a noon game. Louisville really got up for a night game in the way they wouldn't get for a noon.
Right.
Game.
I just wonder if Notre Dame will, if that'll translate to Notre Dame as well. I mean, NC State was noon. I get it. Different environment than the one they'll face here, different opponent than the one they'll face here. Also, like everything I just said about Notre Dame's defense, Clemson's actually better. They're 6th in total defense, 8th in yards per play, only 38th in scoring, but 16th against the rush, 9th against the pass, 98th in turnover margin, which
that'll do it.
We said this off air, like 2011 Notre Dame, like pretty loaded roster that just continued to shoot itself in the foot, finish 8-5, probably should have been 10-2 or 11-1. The more and more I dig, the more and more this game scares me.
Scares you for Notre Dame, or just scares you as somebody who likes watching college football?
Both. Both, because it's just at some point Clemson's not going to turn the ball over, right? You would think.
You know, because we said that in 2011 all year, and it just proved to like they just kept doing it.
No, but they beat the crap out of a pretty good Michigan State team that year. I guess that was their only real big win, but that team did not have, that's Brian Kelly's second team. There were a lot of issues there. We don't need to revisit all of them there about the locker room. This one, I don't know if that's the case with Clemson. I mean, it could be, I don't think it is. I think Notre Dame really, really, really needs to protect the ball here. And they're going to make plays on offense that significantly harder to do when your best offensive weapon is not there anymore. Mitchell Evans is really freaking good. And not just because he's a big guy who catches short routes. No, he went up there and made some plays. against Ohio State, against Duke, against Louisville. You're going to miss that. You just are. So I'm looking forward to the game because there are a lot of interesting elements around it. Like Ohio State speaks for itself. Duke and Louisville, because they were night games, speak for themselves. This one's interesting, especially because of the spot and schedule it's on as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's because it's like Duke. That was like the biggest Duke home game.
Game day. Yeah.
Ever. Louisville was a huge moment for Louisville. Notre Dame contributed to the issues and the crowd having a really good time. But just on the turnover, like Clemson is middle of the road in turnovers forced, 55 with 12 for the year. But they're basically bottom of the barrel in turnovers lost and 110. They're much more likely to give it away than Notre Dame is. But we will get into our preview at the end of the show. We're going to jump in our interview with Ian Williams, who talked a lot about the defensive line play. Some bits about Jim Harbaugh since he played for him in San Francisco. Didn't really get into the controversy up there a whole lot, but to hear a Notre Dame grad say he roots for Michigan most of the time was you don't hear that a whole lot. So we'll get into our interview with Ian Williams, and then Matt and I will come back and we will preview and make predictions for Notre Dame Clemson this weekend. One of the best parts of starting the Independent podcast was a chance to pick the brands we wanted to work with, and Roback was at the top of my list. As the owner of multiple polos, hoodies, Q-zips, and shorts, I can tell you the quality, fit, and feel is unmatched. You've probably seen Roback on Audric Estime, Kyle Hamilton, and Michael Mayer. Or maybe you saw the dozen Notre Dame fans wearing the Shamrock polo at the Central Michigan game last weekend. I can tell you I saw Roback gear in Dublin earlier this year. While the gear hasn't made me quite that athletic as those Notre Dame football players, Roback is my go-to on the golf course, heading to the lake, watching my kids' sports, or just walking the dog. So make sure you're comfortable throughout the season with Roback. Use code IRISH for 20% off your first purchase. That's code IRISH for 20% off all hoodies, polos, Q-zips, and more.
Hey, Pete, I'm looking outside my window at snow right now. You know what that means?
It's probably time to rethink some life choices or just get a new hoodie from homefieldapparel.com.
That's a great idea, my friend. And the great news for our listeners is that first-time customers can get 10% off their first order using code INDEPENDENT23 at checkout. That's INDEPENDENT23 at checkout. Don't miss out on the most sought-after Irish apparel available at homefieldapparel.com today.
Matt, what have you always said is my biggest weakness on fall Saturdays?
Well, Pete, I'd say your hair, but who am I to talk? Let's go with your wardrobe.
Harsh but fair.
ESQ outfits over 400 professional athletes, celebrities, and Irish players on game day with bespoke clothing that elevates their game off the field. ESQ sculpts every garment with precision, helping you look your best for work, weddings, celebrations, or in your case, Pete, the press box.
Listeners of The Independent can get 15% off their first online order by using the code IND15 at checkout. That's IND15, or visit them at their Chicago showroom for a full custom look. Head to esqclothing.com to create your perfect fit. Pleased to welcome into The Independent former Notre Dame defensive tackle and NFL defensive lineman Ian Williams, who tells us he's living the retired life down in Florida doing some media with NFL radio. Ian, it sounds like you get to enjoy the Notre Dame football experience like the millions of fans that get to watch without kind of getting too wrapped up in it. But I guess I was just kind of curious, is if you watched this season, I mean, what sort of your big high level takeaways as a former player watching your former team under Marcus Freeman?
Well, I've been watching the games, you know, ever since I graduated and went out to San Francisco. So I've always kept up with the team. You know, it's always fun to be able to go back and, you know, see the culture and be around the atmosphere. Obviously, that was under Brian Kelly for a long, long tenure. And then now watching the team under Marcus Freeman, seeing the energy, seeing the recruits, and then seeing what they've been able to do with the roster of where Notre Dame is right now. So as a former player, obviously in my area in Orlando, this isn't Chicago, which is a big hub of Notre Dame. So, you know, it's cool to have myself out here to be able to, you know, have the Notre Dame, you know, car decal or, you know, some kind of Halloween or Christmas decor put out in the front yard, you know, let them know, you know, someone from the Irish, you know, stays out here in the area. But it's awesome just to, you know, have that golden. Where is it? It's over here somewhere. Right? Keep these on deck, you know, just to, you know, let people know, you know, where we are and what I'm about. But this season obviously has been great. You know, watching the guys, obviously Ohio State was a tough game, you know, losing that game, and then Louisville, you know, but I think, you know, overall where this team is right now, you know, to have a chance to get to the playoff, you know, two losses. I think the defensive line, I think Al Washington has done a great job. And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit more about, you know, the defensive line and Cross and Heinisch and those guys. They've done awesome this season. So I'm excited to dive in and talk a little bit more about those guys.
So to go back to the Florida thing and the pride you have down there, can you take us a little bit back through your recruitment going to Notre Dame, when you did as well?
Well, honestly, I didn't watch too much of Notre Dame, which is why I watch a lot of it now and I enjoy it now, because I grew up watching Florida State, Miami, Florida. You know, these were the teams that were showcased here in Orlando. Obviously, you had Notre Dame that was on NBC, but I was too busy watching Florida State. But I'll tell you about my recruitment. You know, I was pretty much dead set on going to Florida. And, you know, Coach Weiss, you know, kept up with me the whole time. You know, they never stopped recruiting me. They never changed their feelings on me. They never took away my scholarship or anything like that. And I think when I went up for a visit, I always tell people, you know, what was it that, you know, that made you go to Notre Dame? I tell them all the time, like, honestly, I went up there for a visit. And I remember it was the Penn State game when Paul Posehn was the linebacker. You know, we were, you know, trying to obviously get to the national championship, and we ended up winning the game 37-7. Great atmosphere. It was cold. I needed to feel that. A guy from Orlando just loved it. You know, I just felt like it was home, you know, and I had already been to UF games. I had been to other colleges, and it just didn't feel like Notre Dame felt. And then the atmosphere, the college, the people, you know, it's just, that was my thing that really pulled me out of Orlando and, you know, made me obviously put some green in my blood.
I was interested, before we get into like this year's team right now, I was interested like in sort of your perspective of the program at large, because like I was looking back at the teams you played on here, and it's like, you know, you, Manti, Harrison Smith, Michael Floyd, like there were some dudes on there, but I feel like the team, like, now, like, there are dudes here now, but like, I don't know do you feel like the culture is different now, or just like they've sort of learned how to win in a different way where you guys were sort of figuring that out back then? Like, what's different about the program now than it was back then? Because I feel like, you know, guys like you and Manti, like, there was a lot of talent here, and it feels like the pieces fit together maybe a little bit differently now. I was wondering what your perspective is on that.
Well, you got to remember back when I played, we went through three defense coordinators in, you know, multiple years, you know, different play calling. You know, we had the talent, but we didn't have the talent across the board where we had certain guys. But, you know, I think right now where the state of the university is for the team right now, they have stacked talent pretty much everywhere, you know, and there's really not a downfall when you get to the second and the third string. If you have an injury, which, you know, where you see at the cornerback position where you're able to have an injury right there, and then you have a young guy be able to step in and play. And also, you know, at the offensive line position, you know, so you have pretty much everybody, you know, being a solid guy that has a chance. Zach Martin was the main guy that him and Sam Young were guys I played with that were, you know, really, really good. And obviously, you know, Zach, Hall of Famer, you know, hopefully. And, you know, playing with those guys, you know, obviously it was a different culture there. It was a different experience. We didn't have social media, was Instagram, all that type of stuff. No nil. So guys actually really trying to, you know, make money, or not make money, but make money in the future. And trying to make $300, you know, go semester and then living off a Pell Grant, you know, that was the difference then. So it was more of a hunger. There was a more of a demand that I need to do these things. I need to wake up at 5 a.m. to get to, you know, practice at 6, make sure, you know, I'm there, and then go to class at 8 or 9 a.m. You know, now it's a little bit different where, you know, you got guys who are getting paid, and then you have, you know, the spotlight, you have Instagram, you know, guys, you know, trying to do more for their followers or this and that, da, da, da. So, you know, the culture has changed, but I think Marcus Freeman has done a good job to instill his philosophy and pretty much what he's learned from his tenure as, you know, Ohio State linebacker to the NFL to where he is now. And I think the team has really bought into his energy where, you know, Coach Kelly had done a great job. You know, the same thing that Coach Freeman is doing right now, Coach Kelly did a great job after Coach Weiss, you know, bringing in a new enthusiasm, bringing in a new culture, bringing in some changes that he felt that he had seen from Cincinnati and previously before that. So Coach Freeman's doing the same thing. And he's also done a great job at putting the right coaches around these guys. You need to have great coaching. One thing I learned from going from Notre Dame and having multiple, you know, defensive coaches, going from there to San Francisco, having a great culture with Coach Harbaugh and such great coaching staff, I learned, like, hey, like, you know, of course you need players to win football games, but you also need great coaches.
You know, when you watch this Notre Dame team play this year, I think we all had our question marks about this defensive line coming into the season, and they've easily surpassed all reasonable expectation. What do you see when you watch them that works so well, and who are the guys that have really impressed you the most as a former NFL guy?
Well, obviously those two guys, you know, number 99 and Cross, have done a great job, you know, with their size, and then Cross, you know, being a little bit around my size, you know, 6'1". You know, you have guys who are really bought into the scheme of what, you know, Al is trying to run. And when I call a twist game up front, don't screw it up, guys. Actually line up correctly. Actually, you know, aim towards your target. Make sure you collect the center and make sure you guys run it properly. Because if you do, somebody's going to come free, especially if our ends do their job. And they've done a great job this whole season. So I just feel like the depth, and when those guys come out, you have the younger guys who are able to come in. Because if you look at this depth chart, this is a very, very senior-laden, you know, defense. So a lot of these guys are going to be gone next year, and it's going to be up to a lot of these young guys to step in. So when, you know, Heinisch and the young guys step in, you have Cross, you know, who does a great job at, you know, really just coming in and being the senior leadership of that defense. So that's what I see, you know, and working through the downs where it can be difficult as a defensive lineman, you know, playing so many snaps, especially with the up-tempo style of college football. Now, having to play so many snaps and having to work through the down and knowing that this down right here, 2nd and 7, you might not get a sack, but you have to at least, you know, bull rush or have to, you know, put some kind of pressure and restrict the pocket for the quarterback so that you can help out your back end. And I feel like those guys have really bought into, you know, not about my stats, not about me, and let's win as a team.
I was interested to get a little deeper into Cross with you, because, like, I'm trying to think of, like, an interior defensive lineman that's been, like, that stat productive. And, like, I thought a little bit about Trevor Laws, who was here your freshman year at Notre Dame, who is, you know, kind of built like you, not 6'5". Like, what is it about Cross's game that he's able to be as productive as he is, even if he's not built like the, you know, the air quotes prototypical defensive tackle?
Well, being a little bit shorter obviously helps you in the run game. You know, you're not 6'5", you're not 6'4", so you don't have to bend as much or have to be where you're 6 foot. So these offensive linemen are 6'3", 6'4", 6'5". Naturally, that's what they want because they want length. But when you're trying to double team or you're trying to, you know, push somebody out of the gap, you're trying to push a shorter guy, it's obviously physics is going to take over and that leverage is going to take over, especially if you're in the weight room and following along with the strength program. You're going to be able to hold those double teams and hold those interior blocks a lot better. And that's where I see Cross, you know, possibly getting a chance in the NFL. Especially if he's able to be consistent and do what he's been doing for the Irish for the past few years.
Ian, when's the last time you were up at Notre Dame, and do you have any relationship with Coach Washington? Has he ever invited you over to talk to the team or anything like that?
I haven't. Coach Elston was my guy. Obviously, when Coach Kelly came in, Coach Elston came in, and you know, he could have easily, you know, try to take away my minutes and put in Lou Nix and Ethan Johnson and those guys. But he saw something in me, and kind of defense was what was suited me. You know, 3-4 defense, you're the nose guard. This is your paint, zero technique. Let's work on your stance and let's get you better. So Coach Elston was my guy. So it hurt to see him leave and go to Michigan, go to the rival like that. But it is. And then Coach Washington, I know of him. I haven't spoken to him. And I followed, you know, his coaching career. And he's been in the Big Ten and been at Michigan, been Ohio State. So he's very familiar with, you know, Notre Dame football. But I would definitely, you know, love to, you know, get up there, you know, another time, you know, over the summer, over the spring, and, you know, be able to sit in and, you know, listen to, you know, meetings and stuff like that. Obviously, I have insight from playing with some of the best defensive line.
I was interested a little bit as you watch this defense and what Al Golden's doing with it. I mean, he's got a lot of NFL background, so you can appreciate some of the more complexities that go into an NFL scheme. Why do you think this defense overall has been as good as it's been? And in what ways do you sort of, because I feel it seems like the do your job mentality, which you referenced a little bit earlier, what just like with twists and stunts, like it does seem like a defense where everybody is in the right position almost all of the time. Like what's been the best part of this defense? What's impressed you the most about it?
Well, I think seeing in person, you know, I love to be able to watch the games over TV, but it's also to be awesome to be there in person. I was there for the Ohio State game, and obviously we know how that turned out, but just being able to watch the guys in person. And just like you said, Pete, always doing their job, like being in the right position. And it's not that hard. Like on paper, they draw up exactly what you're supposed to do on this play, on man to man or on 3-4 under base three, whatever you're calling. It's literally drawn up. You're supposed to be in this gap. You got this force. You got this coverage. You're covering this guy. You have this leverage. It's that simple. Just do your job. Do what's on paper. And I feel like, obviously, Notre Dame, you know, we're supposed to have smart guys. So I feel like they're showing that. And, you know, the things that offenses do to be able to take advantage of that, Notre Dame is in the right area. So it's making it harder for these offenses to have to, you know, make their way down the field. And I think we saw an accumulation of that at Pittsburgh, where the guys have been working on this new system. You know, we're in the right place. You know, maybe we don't have, you know, all guys on defense. You know, we saw the end of the Ohio State game, and then Louisville, you know, we had some tough, you know, individual battles during that game where, you know, that was a very, very good football team. And then now you have a Pittsburgh team that you may look like a high school team. And that is a combination of these guys, you know, buying into a system. And then also Coach Golden making this thing look like an NFL type of scheme and making guys move back. It's cool to see Zero looking like he's down playing like the middle third, not the middle third, but he's coming down to play like a linebacker. And then he's right before the ball is snapped, he's sprinting to the middle third or the middle field to kind of show of a rotation of the back end. And that's difficult for a young quarterback or difficult for a college quarterback who's looking to the sideline. What play should I do? What's the box count? And then they got to come back and read. They're not really reading anything. So when you move post snap after you've shown the offense what you're in, and then they call this play to beat that, and then you have a guy sprint back to the middle of the field doing his job and also making it more difficult having to read post snap. I mean, that's why you're ranked and you're, you know, knocking at the door to try to get back in the top 10.
Yeah, it sounds really easy. Yeah, not difficult about that at all. You mentioned the enemy. You mentioned your pro coach. I got to ask you about Jim Harbaugh and everything going on right now. I don't expect you to have a whole lot of insight, but just your take as a Harbaugh disciple and a Notre Dame grad to see Michigan dealing with what they're dealing with right now.
Well, I can tell you this. Obviously, I was never a Michigan fan, but anytime Michigan plays anybody other than Notre Dame, I will root for him because of how great of a coach Coach Harbaugh is. And I know that, you know, he pushes things to the limit, you know, whatever he to do that, you know, fit into the NFL guidelines and policy, he for sure did. If he could have us out for an extra 10 to 15 minutes at the end of practice, if you were a young guy or a rookie, he made sure to figure that out and wiggle it in there. So I hate to see what's going on with him right now. You know, if it is, I feel like, you know, scouting is always, you know, particular in that reason where you're watching the games now, the access to these games are, you know, so much more vast than they used to be. So it's like, of course, people are going to go to games and stuff like that. And, you know, maybe other teams do it, maybe other teams don't. I don't know. I've never coached, never been inside that kind of meeting room. So I don't know, but I hate to see what's going on with him because I know how a great coach he is, and he's changed around that program and made them, you know, a contender pretty much every year since he's been the coach.
Well, I want to wrap up on this, like Notre Dame, the rest of the season as a fan, as a football alumnus, I was curious about your perspective on like success this year, whether, and how much of it comes down to what happens on Saturday at Clemson. Cause like, even though Clemson is not, you know, the Clemson of last year or 2020 when Notre Dame played them and won, like how much bump do you think Notre Dame can get out of win this weekend, and like how much do you think it would change the perception of this season that was sky high going in at the beginning of the Ohio State game and then kind of dropped off, but this, it does seem like it has a chance to sort of get back in a good way this weekend at Clemson.
Well, it's about defeating the teams you're supposed to defeat. Mm-hmm. Simple as that. If you're better than this team, you're supposed to defeat them. If I have better offensive line, if I have better quarterback play, I have better defensive line play, I have better cornerbacks, I should theoretically win. And especially if I have a defensive coordinator that's dialing them up, we should win. You know, and you have Estime running the ball like he is, and then Hartman doing what he's doing, delivering the ball to his playmakers. Yes, Clemson has, you know, always been a good football team, but on paper right now, they're struggling. And Notre Dame, the way they played this past week against Pittsburgh, you know, you're really like on your high point right now. So it could be a trap game, which is, you know, something that would definitely derail their season, because you're knocking at the top 10. You're trying to get back in the college playoffs. Certain teams still can lose and get to one or two or three losses. And maybe, you know, Notre Dame gets back up in there, but don't let a team like Clemson ruin your season just because you're overlooking them, trying to worry about another team that you have to play later on in the season. But it's just, you know, disappointing to see Ohio State and then Louisville, two teams that, you know, you played an awesome game. And, you know, Louisville was probably the one time that, you know, you saw some overmatching. That was a tough game on the road, very, very good opponent. Very physical. And then Ohio State, you should have won that game. You know, you have mistakes that happen at the end of the game. I kind of got into it with people on Twitter because like, oh, the extra guy wouldn't have made a difference. Yes, he would have. That's exactly fuck it. Like, come on. It's like unsound defense. If a guy is right there, it has to bubble and it has to spill, and somebody else does their job, they're right there to make the tackle. It's as simple as that. And that's why it was such a glaring issue of not having all 11 guys out there for multiple plays, because it hurts the defense and it shows up in wins and losses when you're trying to get back to the college playoff, when you have a senior team. What you're supposed to be doing with a senior team, I'm telling you, guys, leave, Matt. It's going to be a whole bunch of sophomores and freshmen, because this is what you're supposed to do. You've been building for multiple years. You take over this team a year ago, and you have a very senior team. So go down to Clemson, handle business, and that should all you be worrying about is try to get to 1-0 against Clemson.
Awesome. Well, on that note, Ian, thanks for joining us. Hope to see you around campus sometime in the near future, and good luck with the rest of your season.
Appreciate you guys. Always to talk about some Irish football.
All right. Thanks, Ian.
Is away, high spiraling punt, backing up Tyree to his own 18, catches it, cuts back to the middle, drilled, breaks a tackle, gets out to the 20, still on his feet, 30, 35, middle of the field, he'll do it, running by himself, middle of the field, 20, 10, touchdown Notre Dame. Hand off up the middle to Estime, full head of steam, he'll get there, 10, 5, touchdown Irish. He was untouched up the middle and bounced it out to the right. 15-yard touchdown run has Notre Dame on top of Pittsburgh, 13-0 with 10:07. Shotgun snap, drop back, back foot, intercepted. This will be a pick six. Jaden Mickey, near sideline, 20, 10, touchdown, Fighting Irish. 42 yards on the ball thrown right to Jaden Mickey.
That was Ian Williams. We thank him for joining the show. You know, it dawned on me after the interview, Connor Stallions did have a photo on his now deleted Instagram page with Al Washington. Yes. So the world is very, very small. I'm sure Al had no freaking clue who this intern was, because I don't think a whole lot of people outside of maybe the Harbaugh family did. But it all ties together. Ian rooting for Michigan when they don't play Notre Dame is certainly a sight to kind of wrap your mind around. Thought he was very insightful on the defense. I think he's a lot smarter and a lot more athletic than me and you. So when he talked about how easy it is, I wonder how, like, I take that and I take that and I think, okay, you say so. I wonder how, like, if he was in a room right now with those defense linemen, how they would take it. And again, I'm sure he could speak their language and you know, make them see it. But it was, I rarely hear it broken down so simply the way he just did it.
Yeah. As somebody who's trying to coach second and third or third and fourth grade basketball right now, like, I often say, like, guys, this is simple. I'm just asking you to set a screen. It's not, it never is that simple.
I really thought we were going to make, after a flag football based episode and my 4-year-old crashing the other, I really thought we'd make it without a
no way. The season gets going on November 12th. I'll be providing weekly updates here on the end of
bye week. Perfect.
Yeah. It's, maybe I'll live stream it. We get some video on the Independent for the social media feed. But yeah, it's just, I think pivoting to this weekend, we talked a bunch about it in the first segment. You know, to me, and Ian sort of references this interview, like, Notre Dame is just better at so many positions in this game, including quarterback, which in this game they have not always been. But I think that, and Matt, you are, I think, very rightly referenced this in the first segment too. Like, Sam Hartman has played Clemson before. He's played very well against Clemson before. This probably should be another one of those. And, like, I think it's fair to say that Sam Hartman, like, in the totality of the season, has just been pretty good. The greatness of the first 4 weeks has sort of worn off a little bit. Didn't throw a touchdown last week, threw two picks. This to me is a game where he's going to have to throw a couple touchdowns, and I believe that he probably will.
I'm less certain with no Mitchell Evans. I really am. And as good as he was last year against Wake is loaded at receiver. Notre Dame is not. I think we overlooked that again. Like, Sam Hartman transferred for, you know, pro style offense, NIL opportunities, yada, yada, yada. He left behind a better collection, at least of pass catchers in Winston-Salem, than he walked to at Notre Dame. Like, there's no question about it. Even this year with all those losses, Wake Forest has a better receiving core than Notre Dame does. And I think we all overlook that when we look at the overall body of work. Predictions, you ready?
I go back and forth on this one. I think the intangibles favor Clemson, maybe in a big way, with just sort of their backs against the wall and the pridefulness of the program. But I don't like picking intangibles over the roster being better, and Notre Dame's roster is better. And I'm taking this with Will Shipley being out, which is not certain as at time of recording, but he's in concussion protocol. And particularly better at quarterback. Maybe I'm catching Cade Klubnik highlights at the wrong time.
No, you're not.
every time I flip on Clemson games, he is throwing an interception or losing a fumble or not spotting a free rusher. The game looks like it's going a million miles an hour for him. And in a week where I think somebody asked me, like, hey, do you think this Dabo Ran is going to fire up the team? Like, Cade Klubnik plays a very highly caffeinated game already. Like, I don't think Dabo Sweeney yelling at him in practice is going to get you. It's going to make it worse, not better. So I'll go Notre Dame in kind of more of a rock fighty type of game. 21-17, where the difference really is Notre Dame's red zone offense goes 3 for 3 and Clemson's doesn't. I don't think Clemson's going to be able to move the ball a whole lot. I don't think Notre Dame is going to, like, light the world on fire offensively either. But I just think the Hartman-Klubnik difference, I think, is vast. And that makes the difference for Notre Dame to sort of clear their final hurdle before a bye and then Wake and then Stanford and what should be a 10-2 season that ends in a New Year's 6.
I'm with you at quarterback. I think Notre Dame's significantly better at that position, and usually that makes you feel better about yourself going in. I don't know if I'm with you on the roster being better. And Clemson's defense ranks better than Notre Dame in most major categories. And outside of Audric Estime, as far as guys who will actually be on the field Saturday, you know, I'd say outside of the running backs, I don't know if we can, you know, give Notre Dame a victory lap without Mitchell Evans there this week. I'm going Clemson 24-17. I don't feel good about it either way, but I picked Notre Dame to win every single game this year. I cannot go through the season picking them to win every single game. They're just not that good of a football team to warrant a 12-0 prediction. I said 9-3 at the beginning of the year, and I said they'd lose one they shouldn't, and they would beat USC. So with that preseason prediction still very much like alive, I'd be foolish to back away from it now, despite the last 9 weeks reteaching me and making me rethink pretty much everything I knew about football, Notre Dame.
And Clemson.
People on the field. Yes, Clemson. A lot of lessons learned, and maybe I'm not learning them if Notre Dame goes out and wins like they should this week. But I'll take Clemson 24-17. I am with you. Going to be a low-scoring game. I think points will be very hard to come by. I'll venture a guess that Clemson finally puts it all together as far as not turning the ball over, not committing a gazillion penalties offensively.
Could
and I
definitely
just don't
see
like
that.
This Notre Dame offense against that defense without Mitchell Evans. I don't.
On the road, too.
On the road, where they haven't looked all that prepared so far this season. And you're going to have receivers outside of Chris Tyree do stuff that they have not really proven capable of doing so far this year. And I don't know if this is the game where they'll actually do that. So I do think Mitchell Evans is a significant difference in this one. Not having him there is going to really hurt these guys offensively. So especially when you said red zone offense, that was the first place my mind went, Mitchell Evans. And without him, I have a harder time seeing it. So I'll take Clemson 24-17. Y'all can laugh at me later because I'll probably be wrong. But my preseason prediction still alive. And until that's dead, I will ride with that into the ground.
You got to roll with it at this point. I'm with you. I feel like I've sort of backed myself in a corner of picking Notre Dame to win every week. Because it's
and
like,
to be fair, they should have, but like
they should have like
there are a lot of teams that should win every week. Texas A&M win every week. I mean,
it's like I could talk myself into thinking that my Ohio State prediction was correct because Notre Dame should have won the game.
Right.
Louisville will forever be the mark of the season. We're just like, what was that about?
Yeah.
But I'm with you. Points will be at a premium. It's a question of like, can Notre Dame sort of get its road act together in a way that they haven't this year after a bye, after playing well against Pittsburgh? I think that they probably will, but like in the same way that you sort of see Clemson as like, they're going to break out offensively and not turn the ball over in a way they haven't all year. Something will have to happen to one of these teams that they have not done a good job of this year. And whoever that team is will be the team that wins the game. It should be a fun watch. We will be able to podcast pretty early in the afternoon afterwards, probably in time to catch the kickoff of Brian Kelly versus Tommy Rees.
It's LSU Alabama, so it's always the biggest game of the year. Our friend Matt Moscona in Baton Rouge asked me to come on today to preview Rees Kelly. And I'm like, oh yeah, wait, that part of it. Yeah, that's pretty big.
That should be a fun one. So hopefully Notre Dame fans can enjoy the doubleheader. It's just like last year, but just also quite a bit different in terms of LSU, Alabama, and Clemson, Notre Dame being
not going on at the same time. I mean, I remember sitting outside the Clemson locker room watching. I'm like, Kelly, go for two. You can't trust your kicker here. And
yeah,
and they went. I'm debating whether to walk over to Wrigley just because I can literally walk there, and I was playing Northwestern there in the lowest total game of the year. And to check on Brian Ferencwatch. Maybe he's available to be hired at Notre Dame or somewhere next year. What a weird situation that is, huh? I mean, You're fired, but you're staying on. But your dad can't make this decision. We got to make it. I don't know. It's just bad all around. I will take great, there'll be great irony if Iowa breaks out and scores 30 points a game from here on out.
Yeah. Speaking of teams doing something they haven't done all year, that would be the most doing something thing that you have never done.
I just love the idea of being at a game where the over-under is 29 in a baseball stadium. Like how many Cubs games went over that this year? There had to be some.
That is a good point, but we will be back on Saturday with our post Notre Dame Clemson independent podcast that we'll usually post. I think they will post on Sunday, in typical fashion, but a reminder, you can follow the show on Apple, Spotify. We have a YouTube stream. You can check us out there. So please subscribe to our YouTube channel. It helps with visibility of the show. More people can find out about the independent. There are many of you who already have based on our numbers and the people that shout me out as I'm walking around Notre Dame Stadium on a week-to-week basis. So until Saturday, he's Matt. I'm Pete. Thanks for being with us on the latest episode of The Independent.